Today's daf is Brachot Daf Gimel. We're going to start at the bottom. Amar Mal.
Okay.
Of Bet Amud Bet. Okay. We have fourth to last line on Bet Amud Bet. Okay. Amar Mar. Amar Mar is a way of going backwards to something we already mentioned, and we're saying we're going to quote that and go from there. If you remember, we ended yesterday with a Braita that had five different opinions in it. Okay, it had that long list after we kept bringing different opinions, and there's all different times when you can say Shema. So one of the opinions was a very strange one. It was Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir said, when the Kohanim tovlim le'echo b'tumatam, when they go to the mikvah, that's when they do it. So that's when you can say Kriyat Shema. But then Rabbi Yehuda immediately said to him, but wait, the Kohanim go to the mikvah when it's still daytime, and how could you possibly say that b'shach b'cha, the time people go to sleep, is when it's still daytime? So the Gemara is going to go back to that line of Rabbi Yehuda. If you notice, Rabbi Meir didn't answer him in the Mishnah, right? He just kind of asked and then left it. So Amar le Rabbi Yehuda, v'halo kohanim mi'ba'od yomim tovlim. Right? So again, that's his question. The kohanim go to the mikvah during the day. Shapir ka'amale Rabbi Yehuda le Rabbi Meir. That's actually a pretty good question. So how could Rabbi Meir possibly say it? V'Rabbi Meir hachi ka'amale. This is what Rabbi Meir would answer. Mi savarta ana abena shmashot didach ka'amina. Who's to say, why do you assume that I hold by your opinion of Ben HaShmashot? Now, those who learned Nida, we had this whole discussion not so long ago about what is the time of Ben HaShmashot. Ben HaShmashot, normally we say, this is why we bring in Shabbat early and we end Shabbat later, because there's that time in between day and night. We're not sure if it's day or night. So it's usually between sunset to three stars coming out, approximately. So that's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion about what Ben HaShmashot is. So of course, since that's his opinion about what Ben HaShmashot is, he basically says, obviously the Kohanim have to dunk before nighttime, which would mean if already at sunset it's possibly nighttime, they have to go to the mikvah before, in which case they are toveling during the day. But there's actually a different opinion about when exactly that time of Ben HaShmashot is that we're not sure is it day or night. And we're going to learn that it's a really, really, really small window. That whole time period of Ben HaShmashot is teeny, according to this other opinion. So Rabbi Meir says, why do you think I hold by your opinion? Ana ben HaShmashot Rabbi Yossi kamina. I hold by Rabbi Yossi's ben HaShmashot opinion. Tamar Rabbi Yossi, ben HaShmashot keherep ayin. Ben HaShmashot is like the blink of an eye. Okay, it's a second. Zenichnas v'zeh yotzeh, v'yefshar lamor alav. You can't even measure it. It's so small. And then when is that time? That time is right before it's dark. In which case, according to him, when can the Kohanim go to the mikvah? Anytime before that. So if we're talking about that our range is, you know, at least from Shkia, right, from sunset, to Tzera Kochavim, so we thought, right, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he thought it was before Shkia, right? But according to Rabbi Meir, he says, no. Ben HaShmashot is like right before Tzera Kochavim. So the Kohanim could theoretically, this whole time period, which we treat as, you know, on Shabbat, we always say, oh, we have to bring in Shabbat earlier. No, according to Rabbi Yossi, that's not. And according to Rabbi Meir, he then says, I hold like Rabbi Yossi, that time the Kohanim could actually be toveling. So if that's the case, then theoretically, now it's funny, because if that's the case, he still views it as day, but yet it's closer to night, so it's not so crazy to think that one could say Kriyat Shema then. Right, you'd have to say two things. If he really views it as day, then he views it as day, and then you can't say Kriyat Shema then. But his point is, well, It's a later time in the day, so it's close enough to nighttime that maybe you could say a b'shach b'cha, even though I still consider it day. And that's when his time would be. But now we have another problem, which is kasha de Rabbi Meir at de Rabbi Meir. Okay, I don't know if you paid attention, and if I had had time, I would have charted all this stuff out, but Rabbi Meir appears in the Mishnah as saying, now, it's just before Tzera Kochavim. But Rabbi Meir said earlier that it's the time that people, the b'nei adam nechdesim le'echol pitam ba'arvei shabbatot, the time that people eat on Erev Shabbat. And that time, we said, was a little bit after Tzera Kochavim. So now we have Rabbi Meir saying it's before Tzera Kochavim, and he also says it's after Tzera Kochavim. So how could we have a contradiction? One source says Rabbi Meir says this. One source says Rabbi Meir says that. How do we resolve it? Typical way we resolve these kind of issues. Trei Tanai Aliba de Rabbi Meir. These are two different Tanaitic sources, two different Tanaim. Okay, there's Rabbi Meir living in his time. Then there's Tanaim that lived the next generation. And they came and brought Rabbi Meir's opinion. And one said he said this, and one said he said that. And there's a disagreement about what Rabbi Meir actually said. Here it's not so bad because it's not a huge difference in time. Wait till we get to the next question where it's a much bigger difference. Kasha de Rabbi Eliezer or de Rabbi Eliezer. Well, if you look at them also, and you go and look at the different opinions, the first Mishnah started off with, first opinion in our Mishnah was, Meimatai koinit shema ba'aravim, misha'asha koanim nichlasim lechob trumatan. And that was Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Remember, it read, from when the koanim go to eat the truma, ad sof hashmorah rishonah, until the end of the first section of the evening. We're going to get back to that in 1 minute. That's all Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So that's Rabbi Eliezer's opinion there, which means Tzeda Kochavim. But Rabbi Eliezer in this braita said, Misha'asha kidesh hayom ba'arvei Shabbatot, which means when Shabbat comes in. When does Shabbat come in? At Shkia. So basically we have Rabbi Eliezer in one place saying Shkia, and in one place saying Tzeda Kochavim. Those are two very different opinions. Okay, so how do we resolve that? So the Gemara says again, Trey Tanai, leave it to Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, well, if we answered that answer before, we can answer that answer again, which is, there's one opinion of Rabbi Eliezer that says it's Tzeda Kochavim, and there's one opinion that Rabbi Eliezer said Shkia. Again, it's a debate among the Tanaim, what exactly the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer was. Okay, now the Gemara says, or alternatively, Ibayit Ema, Reisha Lav Rabbi Eliezer. You could say that the Reisha, and this is something we said a long time ago, which is that maybe the first opinion in that Mishnah, remember we read the line, we said that the first opinion discusses the start time of Shema and the end time, and all the other opinions only discuss the end time. So one of the suggestions we said then was that maybe this first line, Mishasha Konim Lechasim Lechobot Chumatan, isn't actually Rabbi Eliezer. And then you read the Mishnah like this. Me'matai korin shema ba'aravim. From when do we read the Shema in the evening? Misha'a shakonim nechlesim lechobot humatan. Period. That's someone's opinion. It's what we call when there's an opinion without a name. We call it Tanakama. That's the first Tana's opinion. Then the Mishnah says, ad sof hashmorah rishonah is divrei Eliezer. And then ad chatzot. And then we have the different opinions about when the end time is. But the first time is just said in someone's name, and it's actually not Rabbi Eliezer, and then we have no contradiction. So that's the second option to understand the contradiction of Rabbi Eliezer. Ad sof ha'ashmurah. Now we get back to this ashmurah rishona. We're going to get a little into interesting, sort of off the beaten track type of things we're going to discuss now. My kasava Rabbi Eliezer. So the first question is, when he said ad sof ha'ashmurah, now it says, right, we looked at Rashi then. Rashi said, shlish halayla, a third of the night. But the Gemara, Rashi already knew what the Gemara concludes. But the Gemara is going to suggest maybe it's not Shlish HaLayla. How do we know how many Ashmurot there are? How many watches there are of the evening? Okay, now, when do we have watches in the evening? Where does it come from? Army. Okay? Army Shmirot. Right, we all know that. They do Shmirot. So first of all, it's interesting to note, the Koran had a good footnote about it, that the Greeks and the Romans had different schedule of watches in the night. Some had every 4 hours and some had every 3 hours. Like, I don't remember who had which, but there was a difference in style of the Roman army and the Greek army, which were both obviously relevant to the Jews in that time. They were living among them. So we're now going to have a question about which did he mean, 3 hours or 4 hours. So in light of the Greek-Roman debate, it makes a lot more sense that it was obvious to them that there's a set of mishmarot that they did in the army in those days, and we're assuming that's what they're referring to. So my kasava Rabbi Eliezer, what does he hold? I kasava shalosh mishmarot havelayla. If he thinks there's three mishmarot in the night, lemad arba sha'ot, he should have just said very simply until 4 hours, just like we're going to see in tefillah, ad arba sha'ot or ad chatzot or kriyat shema. You could say until 3 hours into the day. Why didn't he just say 4 hours into the night? Vi kasava arba mishmarot havelayla. And the same question on the flip. If he thought it was four, well then lemad shalosh sha'ot, he should have said until 3 hours into the night. So the answer is, La'olam kasavar shalosh mishmarot havelayla. He really did think there were three, and that's why Rashi told us already in the beginning. It was three mishmarot. V'ha kamashman. So now, if you remember, we started with the kohanim. Why do we use the words, l'kohanim nechassim l'chobot v'matan, instead of just saying simply tzeda kohavim? And what do we say? It comes to teach us some halacha by the way. It wanted to teach us that you don't have to wait till you're finished doing your sacrifices the following day. You can already eat the truma at night. So likewise here, he wanted to teach us something else. Now the something else is not as clear and halachic as that one was. Okay, that was a very clear-cut halachic thing that we could relate to. This is a little bit different. So here, what did he want to teach us? Hakamashmalan, he wanted to teach us the ikamishmarot ba'ara. There's watches in the heavens, and there's watches down on earth. In other words, just like we have in the army, Mishmarot, they also have. Ditanya, as it says in the following braita, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shalosh Mishmarot HaBelayla, V'al Kol Mishmar U'Mishmar Yosheva Kadosh Baruch Hu V'Shoeg Ka'ari. What happens in each of these three watches in the evening, up in the heavens? God is sitting there, and he's crying like a lion. What's he crying about? Shneamar. First of all, how do we know he's crying like a lion? It says in Yirmiyahu, Hashem mimarom yishag, God from the heavens will cry out, umimon kodsho yiten kolo, and from his holy abode he will give his voice, shaog yishag al naveu, he will scream out on his, what's the translation of the word
naveu?
What? Lodging. Okay, his lodging, and that's basically the Beit HaMikdash, that it's no longer here. Okay, in Yerushalayim. V'siman l'davar, okay, so now, how did they get three? Because it says yishag, shaog, yishag. There were three variations of the root shaag, to cry out. So that means that God is crying three times. So now,
there are times when we're talking about the beginning of when you can say Kriyat Shema, and here we're talking about the latest.
Yeah, so this is according to the first opinion.
Yeah, going back and forth.
We're finished. Okay, so we're finished with the first part. That was all yesterday and the end of today and what we finished up today, which is when you can start saying Shema. Now we're moving, okay, I should have mentioned this, which is that the way the Gemara works is we started with a Mishnah, and then it's going to slowly go through all the parts of the Mishnah. So it started with the first line. First it started with the first line, which was, where are you all of a sudden starting talking about Shema? And what about night? Why we start at night and not during the day? Then it moved into the next line, which is Mishasha Konim Nechasim Lecho B'Tumatan. And now it's dealing with the next line, which was Ad Sof HaShmoah Rishona. So now we're up to the second part, which is the end of, the end time of Kriyat Shema, according to the first opinion. So now he's trying to teach us, and they bring this Braita to show that there's these three Mishmarot in the heavens, and parallel to them on earth. What are the parallel three Mishmarot? How do we know when these Mishmarot are? Okay, again, people didn't have clocks. Well, look outside, listen outside, and this is what you'll see. Mishmara Rishona, Chamor Noer. Okay, a Chamor, what have they
braise.
What?
Donkey.
Okay, a donkey braise, thank you. A donkey braise. Shnia, the second one, Klavim Tzoakim, the dog's bark. Shlishit, and the third one, Tinok Yonek Mishte Imo, V'isha Mesaperet Im Bala. Right, a beautiful image, right? The baby wakes up to be nursing, and a husband, the wife starts talking with her husband, right? They wake up early in the morning, and they're in bed, and then, right, you can imagine this. Okay, that's a siman of when these Mishmarot happen, okay? Now there's going to be a little bit of a debate. My Kachashiv Rabbi Eliezer, when he did this calculation of this is the first, this is the second, this is the third, which part was he referring to? The beginning of each? The end of each? The middle of each? Okay, in other words, the point is that this is a sign that this is the first, this is a sign the second, but at what point in the Mishmar, right, the Mishmar is a range of 4 hours, so which point does this happen? So, they say, Itchilat Mishmarot, if we're trying to say this is the sign that the Mishmar is starting, okay, well then, Kachashiv, if that's what he's referring to, you don't need a siman when the first mishmar starts. Everybody knows it's Seder Kochavim, it's dark out. Everybody knows that. Everybody just came home from work, and everybody knows that time. So you would need to say the first mishmar starts when the donkey brays. Everybody knows. Or tehi, it's nighttime, right? It's always interesting. Or is light, but they don't want to. Okay, and this is actually something that's important to talk about here because this is going to affect a lot of the pages. We're starting, the whole discussion starts with nighttime. Now, nighttime, you have to understand, in those days, without lights, it was a time of fear. We're going to get to Kriyat Shema Lamita in a few dapim, and why they said it. They were scared of all these things that go on at night. So what's interesting here is they call the night Orta. They're scared to say night. Reminds me, I used to have bad dreams when I was a kid of a witch when I was like 3 years old, and I went to see Snow White, and it petrified me. Yeah. And I used to say, I had a dream about the big W. I couldn't say witch, because saying the word witch would just scare me. They didn't want to say night because it scared them. So they called it Orta, which is or, which is light. So they were kind of saying the night is light. Okay, so it comes up in a lot of places. That's why we say or le. Right, or
the stars come out. So the stars
The stars light it out. Yeah, fair. That's nice. They light up the night. That's a good image. Okay, so now they say, So if it's the beginning, well, we don't need a siman to designate the beginning. And yisof mishmaro kachashiv, well, sof mishmara achrona lamali. If you're talking about this is the end of the mishmar, well, we all know when the last mishmar ends because it's morning. So you don't need a siman for that. Simana yamamahi, it's already night, daytime. Everybody can see that it's daytime. Ella, right, we obviously have this problem. If it's saying the beginning of each one, we don't need the first one. If it's saying the end, we don't need the last one. Ella, so they come up with this very creative interpretation. It's not the way I would have thought to organize this. Chashiv sof mishmara rishona, utchilat mishmara achrona. So it's telling you, the end of the first mishmara is when the donkey brays. The beginning of the last mishmar is when the child wakes up, which, by the way, is a whole big difference, right? That's like 2 a.m. Hopefully that's not happening. And generally, I don't think husbands and wives are discussing things at that hour, although it does sometimes happen. The emtsa'it to emtsa'ita. Now, what about the middle one? Well, you don't need, right? If you have the end time of that and the beginning time of that, you don't. It's the middle, the center of the middle one. Now, that's a bit of a weird thing to tell you. This mishmar and that one's noting the end, and that's the beginning, and that's the middle. That already becomes a little confusing, but that's one answer. V'ibayteima, alternatively, kulu sof mishmaro kachashiv. They're really talking about the end time. V'chiteima, achrona lo tzarech. Now, didn't you say, but we don't really need the last one? L'may nafkamina, l'mikre kriyachma, l'man digane bebayit afel v'lo yadazman kriyachma emat. It's someone who's living in a dark house with no windows and doesn't know what the time is. This is great because I was talking to my daughter yesterday who's living in the Kiriya underground and has no idea when it's morning because there's no light. You know, I said, did you not see sunlight all day? Right? She goes for a walk for 5 minutes during the day just to see some sunlight. But otherwise, right, you're down below and you have no clue of what time of day it is. So that's like a good example of you would need some sort of sign. So when the baby wakes up, right, the baby doesn't have any, the light doesn't affect the baby. The baby wakes up because the baby's hungry. So that would then, that would be your sign that it's time, that it's the morning. And then you would get up and say Kriyat Shema. Leikum v'likre. You would get up and say Kriyat Shema. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Mishmei Derav. Gimel Mishmarot HaVelayla. He now says there's 3 Mishmarot at night. Okay, another statement about this. V'al kol Mishmar u'Mishmar Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'Shoei Kari. This is repetition of what we saw, but he's going to go on more. So all of those 3 times, God is sitting there crying for Omer. Oy labanim, woe for my sons, shebavonotehem ichravti et beti, bisarafti et echali, vihiglitim lebein umot haolam. Right? That because of them, they sinned, I had to destroy my house, I burnt my abode, and I sent them to exile among the nations. Okay, now we're going to have a story about this. Tanya Amar Rabbi Yossi, very famous story. Pam achat hayiti malech baderech. Once I was walking on a path, I was traveling, v'nichnasti l'churva achat mi'churvot Yerushalayim. I went to one of the destroyed houses of Jerusalem. Lit palel. I went in there to daven because I was on the way. I didn't want to daven on the street, right? This happens often. You have to daven and it's in the middle of the street. It's very distracting. You worry people are going to stop you and bother you. And so he said, oh, here's an empty, deserted lot, you know, deserted, destructive place that was destroyed from Yerushalayim. Let me go there and pray. Ba Eliyahu and Eliyahu Zachor Latov. Who appears there? Eliyahu Navi. V'shamar li ala petach, and he watched, and that's while I was in there, he watched it for me. Why did he watch it? Well, we're going to learn that in Korvot, it often happens in destroyed places, there's mizikim, which are considered evil spirits roaming around. So Eliyahu protected him from the entrance. Ad shesiyamti tfilati, until I finished my prayer. L'achar shesiyamti tfilati amarli, shalom alecha rabbi, he said, hello rabbi, amarti lo shalom alecha rabbi mori. So I said to him, Shalom Alecha, my rabbi, my teacher. V'amar li b'ni, mipnei ma nichnasa l'churvazo. Why did you go into that deserted ruin? Amar tilo, lihitpalel. I said, I went into daven. V'amar li, haya lecha lihitpalel baderech. You should have prayed on the way. V'amar tilo, mitirei hayiti, shema yapsiku bi ovrei drachim. I was worried that people were going to stop me and bother me. Amar li, haya lecha lihitpalel tfila k'tzara. You should have davened a shorter prayer. You should have kept your prayer short. Okay, Rashi says this actually means Havinenu, which is a prayer that we're going to learn about later, which they would say all the middle blessings of Shemona Esrei as one. Okay, the 3 blessings before, the 3 blessings after, but then all the middle blessings into one mini blessing. Okay, so you should have davened short. Some people say it's not necessarily that. It's some other short prayer, but should have just made a short prayer. Botah, you can also, in those days also, tefillah was less structured than it is now. Botah sha'al lamadti mimenu shlosha dvarim. So after that encounter, I learned three things. Lamadti she'enech, this is, by the way, parenthetical, because we're going to get back to the story. Lamadti she'enech nesim l'chorba. I learned that you're not supposed to go into a ruin. We'll see why in a bit. V'lamadti she'mitpalalim baderech, that you can pray while you're on the way. V'lamadti she'mitpalal baderech, mitpalal tefillah tzara. And if you're going to pray while you're on a path, while you're on the way, well, make it short. V'amar, then the story continues. V'amar li b'ni ma kol shamata b'chor v'azo. Did you, what voice did you hear? Somehow he knew that he heard something. First of all, he was standing at the door. So maybe Eliyahu heard it in the distance, but didn't really hear so clearly what it was. V'amarti lo, shamati bat kol, I heard a voice, a heavenly voice, sheminahemet ki yona, that was, cooing, like a dove. Ve'omeret, oy labanim sh'avavnotehem hechravti epeti v'saravti etechali v'igliatim liben ha'umo. Exactly that voice that we were saying that God says in the middle of the night. V'amar li, chayecha v'chaye roshcha. And I said to him, right, Eliyahu said to Rabbi Yossi, I swear, lo sha'azo b'vlad omeret kach, ela b'chol yom v'yom shalosh pa'amim omeret kach. Okay, you should only know it wasn't just when you went into the korba, but three times a night, God is saying that statement. V'lo zo b'vlad, not only that, ela b'sha'ash Yisrael nechnesim lebatei kneisiyot ulebatei midrashot ve'onim yehe shmei hagadol mevorach. When the Jews go into their prayer places and they say the words, notice it's different from our version, yehe shmei hagadol mevorach. It's very interesting because, right, it says hagadol instead of yehe shmei rabah, which means the same thing, but it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. It's interesting. People, when you say yehe shmei rabah mevorach, I don't know if you ever thought about it. What does it mean? So it could mean Yehe shame the Rabbah, the shame harabah, the shame agadol, which is the way it reads here, should be blessed. But some people read it as Yehe shmei Rabbah mevorach. The blessing should be great. The name should be blessed great.
In the great blessing.
Right. Or it should be blessed
greatly.
Greatly or in a huge manner. So this shows it's the gadol is referring to the shame, to the name. Okay. So while the people are saying this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu menaneh v'rosho v'omer, Ashrei HaMelech shemekalsim oto b'beito, right? Happy is the king who is praised in his own home. Kach malo la'av sheiglat banav v'oilo lebanim shegalu me'al shulchan avihem. Okay, but look at the father who exiled his children and woe to the children that ended up being sent to exile. Now, but it doesn't just say being sent to exile. It's not just he's sad for them, but they were sent to exile from their father's table. And I think the image that conjured up in my mind is that God is not only sad for himself, about himself, that his sons left their ways, but now it's like that feeling, it's the opposite feeling of pride of your children. It's that feeling of, oh, look at my children and how bad they went off and what kind of situation they had to bring me to. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we're going to learn about why can't you go into a ruin, right? Seemed like a reasonable thing. Why not? So, mipnei shlosha dvarim ein nechnesim l'chorva. There's three reasons why you can't go into a chorva, a ruin. Now we're going to see, the way we understand ruin right now sounds like it was a place that at once was a great place and now is destroyed, right? That's a ruin, translated as a ruin. And now it's destroyed. We're going to learn, though, that ruin, the chorva, doesn't actually mean necessarily a place that was destroyed. Chorvot Yerushalayim, it was clearly in this story, that's what it was referring to. But it's just going to mean an abandoned house. Because soon they're going to give examples of it could be new. It could be, so you're going to see new. What do you mean? How could a ruin be new? It sounds like an oxymoron. But they're going to say the idea of a chorva is just a deserted place. So what's the problem with deserted places? There's a few problems. One, mipnei achashad. We're worried that people will suspect that you went in there with some woman to have sexual relations with a woman in this deserted place where nobody is. Two, mipnei mapolet, because it's an old place, we're worried it might fall apart, right? Like the Versailles Hall, the whole thing collapsed, right? And so we're worried about things collapsing. And three, mipnei hamizikin, because of the evil spirits that hang out in these places. You think about all the very haunted houses, right? Those, okay. So, now they say, Mipnei HaChashad, why do you have to say Mipnei HaChashad? V'tipuvle mishum mapolet. Now they're going to basically throw up in the air all these three. Why do you need three? One would have been enough. You could have just said, Mipnei HaMapolet. You don't also need Mipnei HaChashad. So what do they say? Well, if it was Bechadite, if it was a new building, then you didn't have to worry about a Mapolet, assuming it was built properly, not like the Versailles. But if it was a new building that was built properly, you don't have to worry about it falling apart. Then you'd have to worry about Chashad. Right, about that people will suspect that you're there with a woman. But then you could have just said, well, there's evil spirits there. So they say, betray. Well, if you go with two people, then, right, the evil spirits get to people when they're alone. That's like the fear. Okay, now you might laugh, right? What is this whole thing about evil spirits? So evil spirits come up in the Gemara a lot, and there's two approaches to them. One is the belief that there really were evil spirits abound, and that, you know, there were certain ways they would get to people. The other is that it's the fear of people. And it's not really that there's evil spirits. The way people talk about haunted houses, people really think the house is haunted and there's ghosts there. You know, most people don't really believe that there's ghosts in those houses, but they're scared, right? It's our own psychological insecurities, okay? So don't go into an alone place because you'll be insecure and that will cause, you know, that might cause a problem just by your own insecurities could create problems. So now they say, so if it's Misha Mazikin, you can go with two and then you can avoid the Mazikin problem. So then they say, I betray chashad nami leka. Right? But if you go with two, then you also don't have... So let's say you're in a new ruin, and you go in with two people, so there's no fear of mazikin, of evil spirits, and there's no fear of them worrying you that you're with there with some woman, because there's two men there. So they say, betray upritze. If there's two men who are both prutzim, they're both men who would sleep with a woman together or something like that, then you'd have to worry about that. Mipnei mapolet. So now let's go to the mapolet one. We're worried about it caving in. But what? There's other issues. So why do you have to mention the mapolet if you already have the concern of chashad or mizikin? So they say, betray ukshere. If they're trying to find each time a case where only one of the answers would be relevant. So if you have two people who go in and they're both ksherim, so you don't have to worry about evil spirits, you don't have to worry about people suspecting you, but you do still have to worry about the building caving in. Mipnei mizikin. So now, what about the evil spirits? V'tepuklei mipnei chashad u'mapolet. Right. What case would you have only an issue of mizikin and nothing else? Bechor v'chadete u'betrei u'ksherei. It would be a new building, so you don't have to worry about mapolet. And two good, you know, ksherim people went in, and therefore you wouldn't have to worry about chashad. And therefore, the only fear would be mizikin. I betrei mizikin amileka. But didn't we just say two people? You don't have to worry about evil spirits either. So now we're going to learn something else about evil spirits. Bimkoman chayshinan. When they're in their home territory, they're more dangerous and they can even affect two people. So that there's certain, again, so how do you understand this? Again, if you understand in the way that they really are evil spirits, so then there's rules about where evil spirits are stronger. Otherwise, you could just say, it depends how haunted the place really is, right? That there's certain places where you could really be more scared even if you're with two people. V'ibai deima, alternatively, you could say, la'olam bechad. It could be one person, ubechor v'chadete, and in a new abandoned building, dekai bedabra, that was in the desert. Dehata mishum chashad leka, dehat isha bedabra lo shchicha, umishum mizikin ika. You could have this example where you're in the desert. Now, in the desert, there's no women, apparently. Women didn't walk around the desert. So if you're in the desert, I think what they really mean, I don't know if they mean the desert, really, but you're in a place where there's nobody else there. So if there's nobody else there, then you don't have to worry about anyone suspecting you because it's not like there's any women around that they're going to suspect you having been with. So then you would have to cut. The only issue would be the mizikin. Okay, so that would be one person, and then that would resolve the issue of two people mizikin, how the mizikin get there. So that's the answer. Okay, again, this is all an exercise in trying to understand why they had to bring all three reasons when you really could have just given one. By the way, if you notice, there's a theme of threes here. There were three things I learned from Eliyahu. There's three reasons why. Three is a number that comes up in stories all the time. It's one of those literary numbers. Tanu Rabbanan. Arbam, and it also relates to the three Mishmarot of the night. It's like the four Kushiyot of Pesach and the four sons of the four, right? There's numbers that repeat themselves. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan, another brayta. Arba Mishmarot Havalayla Divrei Rebbe. Rabbi Natan Omer Shalosh. Here you see it. Big debate, is it four or three, like the Greeks and the Romans? My time into Rabbi Natan, what's his reason? Dichtiv vayavo Gid'on, here's a pasuk from Sefer Shoftim, u'mea ish asher ito b'ketzea machane, rosh ha'ashmoret ha'tichona. The head of the Ashmoret, he was in charge of the middle guarding hour, right? The guarding hours. So what do you see here? Middle sounds like there's one before and one after. So Tana ein tichona ela sheyesh lefaneha ulacharei. So they quote a Tanaitic source that says when you talk about middle, it means there's one before and one after, and that would explain three. The Rebbe, what would Rebbe say? Because he says there's four. My tichona, achat min atichona shebetichonot. One of the middle, right? This is like middle child syndrome. Yeah. Can you be a middle child if there's four of you in the family? Right? So it's one of the middle ones. Usually it's one of those kids ends up being a middle child, right? I don't know what happens when you have eight. okay. V'Rabbi Natan. You can tell us after class. V'Rabbi Natan, what's he going to respond to that? Because you really could say one of the middle ones. That, and then you could say four. Why did he say three from that? Miktiv tichona shebetichonot. It doesn't say tichona shebetichonot, the middle of the middle, right? One of the middle ones. Tichonaktiv, it just says the middle, which really sounds like smack in the middle. My time at Rebbe. So, okay, so that explained the pasuk that Rabbi Natan uses, the middle. What about Rebbe? What's his opinion? Where does he get it from that it's four? I'm a Rabbi Zreka, I'm a Rabbi Ami, I'm a Rabbi Shoben Levi. Katuv echad omer chatzot laila akum lehodot lecha al mishpatei tzikecha. Okay, this is a pasuk in Tehillim, which we attribute to David HaMelech, and from here we're going to get off on stories about David HaMelech and what time he woke up. Okay, I would say in the middle of the night, but we're going to see, I wouldn't even say what time did he wake up in the middle of the night, because you'll see what some people think, that it's not even the middle of the night, but let's start with the middle of the night. This says, I wake up in the middle of the night, lehodot lecha, to praise God, al mishpatei tzikecha, right, for all the just things you do. V'katu lechan omer, kidmu enai ashmorot. Okay, my eyes
preceded
the Ashmorot. Okay, so now they say, meaning when I wake up in Chatzot, I wake up before the Ashmorot in plural. That means that there must be two more Mishmarot to go, otherwise he wouldn't say, I woke up before the Mishmarot. HaKetzad, Arba Mishmarot, HaBelayla, it must be this four Mishmarot. For Rabbi Natan, so how does he respond to that Pasuk? Savalak Rabbi Yoshua. He held like Rabbi Yoshua, Ditnan, as it says in the following Mishnah, Rabbi Yoshua Omer Ad Shalosh Shaot. You can say Kriyat Shema, okay, this is a bit of a spoiler, we're going to get to this later. You can say Kriyat Shema until 3 hours into the day. Why? Okay, now it's not because teenagers sleep late or other reasons like that. Really, everybody in those days woke up super early at sunrise, but Kein Derech HaMelechim La'amod B'Shalosh Shaot. The kings would sleep later. So now what does he say? Well, if the king slept later, then what do you have? Sheet Delilah, you have the six of the night is the first mishmar he's referring to. Vitarte diyamama, havalu shtei mishmarot. You have the mishmar that's coming, that's in front of him and when he woke up, of the night. And then since he slept late because he was a king, or since he didn't sleep late, he woke up at chatzot, but since other kings generally sleep late, so the second mishmar was already the day mishmar that he was referring to. He's saying, I wake up before most kings. And I'm a king, I wake up before the most kings do, which means he's got a mishmar at night and a mishmar in the day, which means you don't necessarily have to say Ashmorot means two mishmarot after chatzot, which would mean four. But you could still say it means three. Rav Ashi gives another example. Amar mishmarot upal ganami mishmarot karaluhu. And this is probably what you were thinking, which is at 12, right, when you're sitting at 12, so at 2 is the next mishmar and at 6 is the next mishmar, right? So when you're at midnight, you really do still have two mishmarot ahead of you, even if you say three, because you have half a mishmar and a whole mishmar. So one and a half could still be called two, in which case that resolves it. So again, we said either we don't count the half because it's only a half, and we just say one full mishmar plus another full mishmar, which gets you to 9 o'clock in the morning. Okay? That's until the kings would generally wake up, and he would wake up two mishmar before, or we say one and a half counts as two. V'amar Rabbi Zreka, Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Okay, we just quoted the name Rabbi Zreka, said the name of Rabbi Ami, said the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi about this chatzot, and now we're going to quote something else he says. Interesting. Then ein omrim b'fnei hamet ela dvarav shel met. When the mate is standing before you right at the funeral, you shouldn't say anything other than things that have to do with the mate. This is out of respect for the dead person. Although we'll talk about maybe another reason why. Now we're going to have a debate about what you can say in front of the mate. So, what are we talking about? Amar Rabbi Ami Bar Kahana, lo maran ela b'divrei Torah. You just can't say divrei Torah. What's the reason? It's the same reason why people don't wear their tzitzit in a cemetery, because, right, or they hide them, because it's called lo'eg la'rash. You're kind of making fun, like, oh, well, we can learn Torah, and you're dead, and you no longer have that opportunity, and it's not appropriate. So his opinion is, you can't talk divrei Torah, aval mile de'alma leit lamba, but there's no problem to talk about anything else. Ve'ika de'amre, amar Abi Amar bar Kahana, again, it was a debate about, this is how we started today, what exactly he said, two opinions about what he said. It was the opposite. Lo amaran ela afilu b'divrei Torah, b'kol shekei mile de'alma. Not even divrei Torah you can't say. Of course you can't talk about mundane things in front of a dead body. So now, one reason is because it's not respectable to the dead person. The other reason I thought about, which I relate to better, because the person who's dead is dead and presumably can't hear you, but where are you when you're near the dead person? You're right around the family who's congregating for the dead. And if you start having a mundane conversation, how inappropriate that is for the family. And that this is trying to say, watch what you say around the family, you know, and be sensitive to what's going on, right? It's the same thing at funerals. Like sometimes you'll be at a funeral and people are all schmoozing and it's inappropriate, right? Usually it's pretty serious at a funeral and people take it very seriously because it's not appropriate. And that's what this is really referring to. So the first opinion, it has to do with a totally different issue. It's about mocking the dead person. We're cognizant of the fact that the dead person can't learn Torah anymore. Second is sensitivity either to the dead person or to the family of the dead person. Now we're going to question this thing about David. Did he really wake up in the middle of the night? David bepalga delel yahavakai me'or tavakai. Okay, not that he didn't wake up in the morning, at night, in the middle of the night. He woke up in the morning. No. He never really slept. He woke up already at nighttime. Okay, he would wake up even earlier than midnight. Dichtiv, how do we know this? Kadamti banefesh ve'eshaveh. I got up early in the neshef. We don't yet know what neshef is. Ve'eshaveh, and I prayed to God. Umimai dahai neshef ortehu. How do we know that neshef means night? Dichtiv, banefesh ba'erev. Ba'erev, yom b'ishon, wait, how do you read this? B'neshef ba'erev. Where's the break in the pasuk? B'neshef. B'neshef ba'erev.
Yom b'ishon laila v'afela.
One second. Saying the neshef is ba'erev yom b'ishon laila v'afela. In other words, the neshef comes when it's the dark of the night. Okay? That's the neshef. So now we have, so there we see that neshef is night. So Amar Rav Hoshaya, Amar Rabbi Acha, Hachi Kamar. Me'olam lo avar alai chatzot laila b'shina. I never slept through chatzot. In other words, I was always up before that. Okay? And it doesn't mean I wake up at midnight. No. I never had a day where I was awake through, you know, through midnight. Rabbi Zeira Amar, a different answer. Al chatzot laila hayam nem nem kisus. He was in and out of sleep. He was half asleep. That's the first pasuk about the neshef. He wasn't fully sleeping. But after that, he would wake up like a lion. Rav Ashi Amar, third opinion, ad chatzot laila hayav seik b'torah. The first part of the night, he was busy with Torah. When it says b'chatzot laila, kum, right there it says b'chatzot laila, sorry, I lost the pasuk. Where is it? Kidamti b'neshef e'shavea. Okay? There I would, right, sorry, is that the one? No, chatzot laila kum lehodot lecha. Then I would go to praise God. Okay, so first he would wake up and learn Torah. After that, he would praise God. But now they want a question. Who says that neshef, first of all, where's neshef come from? To blow. So where do we get that neshef is neshef or to who? How do we know it's night? Ha neshef tzafru, maybe it's morning. Dichtiv, vayakem David meha neshef ba'ada erev. David was fighting from the morning till the night. Right, or at least we assume. Me'aneshef ad ha'erev sounds like, if he was fighting them from this time till the evening, sounds like from morning till night. L'machoratam. Ad ha'erev l'machoratam. So what do they say? Ad ha'erev l'machoratam. My lav mitzapra v'alelya. Don't we assume it meant from morning till night? Lo. No, you could simply say, me'orta v'ad orta. No, neshef could still mean night. It means he fought them from the night to the next night. Okay, you see, David really didn't sleep. Ihachi, but if that's the case, lichtov me'an neshef ad ha'neshef. If you wanted to say it was 24 hours, you wouldn't have said from one time to another. You would have said from that time to the time the next day. Oh, me'an erev ad ha'erev. You would have said, you know, either me'an neshef ad ha'neshef or me'an erev ad ha'erev. You wouldn't have said me'an neshef ad ha'erev. Ela amarava, trein nishve havu. There's two types. Neshef could mean night, it could mean day. And this is where I go back to it means blowing. Why? Nashaf Lelya Va'ate Yamama. Nashaf Yamama Va'ate Lelya. It's an indication of one blowing the other away. The kind of the day blows into the night, and the night blows into the day. It's talking about a passage of time, a passage of time periods, right, from one to the other. Now, David, mi hava yada palga delelya emat. How did he know when midnight was? Okay, again, without clocks or anything else, how would he know what midnight was? And it's not just that we're concerned about clocks; it's because hashta Moshe Rabbeinu lo hava yada. Moshe didn't know when Chatzot was. How do we know that Moshe didn't know what Chatzot was? Well, in the story of Mitzrayim, what does it say? Moshe says, right, Komar Hashem, Kechatzot, Laila, Ani Yotze. Now, what's Kechatzot? Around Chatzot. Moshe didn't know exactly when Chatzot was, so how did David HaMelech know when Chatzot was? So, we'll read a little more about Moshe. Kechatzot, Laila, Ani Yotze, B'toch Mitzrayim. My Kechatzot. Ilema da'amarle kudshabarichu Kechatzot. Now, he said, God told me he's going to come Kechatzot, Laila. Now, you think God didn't know when Chatzot was? That's not possible. There's no Mika Sveka Kamishmaya. What, is there anything that God doesn't know? Ela da'amar lei b'chatzot. God said b'chatzot. Va'ata iu v'amar kichatzot. But when Moshe said it to the people, he said kichatzot. So you see, Alma Mesapgalei. V'David havayada. So how did David know? V'David havayada? And how would David know? Well, David Simana Havale, he had a Siman. What was his Siman? And here we get into a story. To Amar Avachar Rabizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida, Kinor Hayataloy Lamala Mimitato Shel David. Okay, there was a harp hanging on top of David's bed. Vekevan Shigia Chatzot Laila, as soon as midnight would come, and this goes back to where we started about all these Simanim of the dogs barking, and like there's outer things that go on that tell us when certain times of the day are. And again, in a world without clocks, one can understand why they needed all these indicators. So, and this is going to be a theme that continues throughout this whole parak. We're going to talk about the times of Kriyat Shema and when you can distinguish between colors and all sorts of things. Kevan shigia chatzot laila, so the wind would come. Baruch tzfonit v'noshevet bo. So the assumption is this northern wind would come and blow the harp, and then obviously it would play music. And it would start a kind of like chimes. It would start playing. By the way, this contradicts our other thing. We said he got up to say Shiro v'tishpachot echatzot. This says he got up to learn Torah. So it's a different version of what he did. As soon as Amud HaShachar would come up, so morning would come, and the advisors would come in and start dealing with the things of the day. Now here, this seems to be on a particular day. There was the following discussion happened. Amrulo, Adonenu Amelech, Amcha Yisrael, Tzrichim Parnasa. You know, you gotta help the people. The economy. We're struggling with the economy. Amar lahem, lichu bihit parnasu zemizeh. The rich should take care of the poor, right? Figure it out, work it out amongst yourselves. Not my problem. You guys deal with the economy. Okay, socialist country. Amrulo. Ain't, oh, not necessarily, socialists also, actually, right? But, okay. So, Amrulo. Ain't ha-komets masbiya et ha-ari. The ain't ha-bor mitmalei mechuyato. They say, we don't have enough food to go around. Even the rich people aren't rich enough, right? The boar can't fill up from chuyato. There's different opinions. Some people say that the rain is never going to fill it up. We have to pipe water in from other places. Some people say if you take all the dirt out of a boar, you'll never be able to take that same dirt and put it back in. Okay? A pit, yes. Amar lahem. So he said to them, fine, if you don't have enough food, you don't have enough thing, go fight some nation, take over their stuff, and then you'll have. So what do they do? So they went out, they did three things, and we'll pick up with this tomorrow. The first thing is they went to the head of the army and said, okay, let's, you know, give us some advice about this. So I don't remember, was he the head of the army? Forgot what his job was, but he was one of the advisors, so they took some military advice. V'nimlachim b'Sanhedrin. Then they went to the Sanhedrin. Why they went to the Sanhedrin, it's not clear. Rashi says they went to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin was the court. They went to the Sanhedrin, Rashi says, they asked permission so that they would pray for them. They wanted the big, important people of the courts to pray for them. To me, that doesn't seem like the pshat, because the court is what's different about an advisor. An advisor advises you and says, I suggest this is what you should do. But when you go to a court, they don't give advice. The court says, clearly, this is what you're supposed to do. And what's the third? Shoalim ba'urim b'tumim. And then you go and ask God also. In other words, you cover, it's like we talked about recently in Nida, we had about the Hishtadlut, and you have to work, but also look at God. You have to work with both things at the same time. So you have to go to advisors, but then it doesn't really help to go to advisors if they give you different opinions. You got to at some point decide, be decisive, move forward, but don't forget to ask God about things. You also have to, you know, and then Urim Bitumim, where this, how do they define that in English?
They don't.
Yeah, there's no real answer for Urim Bitumim. It was this way that they would ask God questions, and there was some miraculous way where God would somewhat answer them about whether they should go or not. So this is the three, and now you might ask, why go to the Sanhedrin? This actually just dawned on me. Why go to the Sanhedrin why go to the advisors if you can go to the Sanhedrin? So why? Because in order to get to a decision, you have to think it through. And to go to advisors, that's the way you think things through. And only after you think things through can you actually come to a decision. So you have to be decisive, but you have to be decisive after you've given a thought. So you kind of thought process, decision, and then check with God. So that's the way to make decisions. And you could use this as a decision-making thing in general. Obviously, we don't have a room between, but we could try to at least think about what God might expect of us to do. Maybe that's a take home from this.